Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki
jai,
Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai,
Giriraj Maharaj ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Gopremana
Deli Guru.
So we'll give some key memory verses for the next four chapters. Like that. Maybe there was some dispute last time between Brahma Sumitra and the Bhagavatam. So we'll take two verses from the Bhagavatam. The verses which we discussed last time. Verses 33 and 34 of chapter 8, 4.8, 33 and 34. Nice verses. And then which verses did I give you from Brahma Samhita?
32, 35.
Okay, so you can have 32 and 35. Okay. So Brahma Samhita, 32 and 35. And Bhagavatam 4.8, 33 and 34. Is everyone happy? Good. Okay. Does that do it for us? Okay, so what did we discuss last night? Summary. Let's close that door properly, otherwise. Any other points?
Any person who desires the fruits of his dharma, artha, kama, moksha, still they should always approach the Supreme Court of the Godhead rather than the demigod. Because then Lord Krishna keeps saying he purifies the heart. And in such a way, you do that. Okay. Fulfillment of your desire as well as advancement in Krishna.
Good.
As I was mentioning after the class, the last two verses, 33 34, Bhujindu mentions in already the Lotus Feet that the spiritual master takes all opportunities to engage the disciples in devotional service. So we see direct instructions
from Narada Muni to Guru Maharaj to
engage in such a duty. Because the duty of a session is to participate in that. Anything else? When we fully dedicate our lives to Krishna, we have to have the faith that He will give us much more than what we desire. And you see that in Guru Maharaj's case, that he had the desire to have kingdom greater than women. And then when he saw when he saw Lord Narayan, he didn't want that desire to be fulfilled. But even then, you know, because he was such a great devotee, the Lord gave him a special plan to him. You see that in the case of Sardama Muni also. That you know, he desired for a life, but the Lord gave him such a great qualified man. And that Krishna also said that Krishna needs your attention. He didn't even ask that Krishna understood his desire and said that in order for everyone, he will come to his property.
Good point. Any other points?
When we have strong desires for self gratification, the spiritual methods are not with your own heart. So, when you want to want to have self-gratification at the parity. So, only somebody talks about spiritual life and spiritual benefits, it does not come.
When you try to be an expert preacher, and you go into the requirement of the audience, it is only because of the supreme deity of this happiness. And when we go to happiness or distress, we have to understand that the respective quota from the previous activities are diminishing. And just wait so that it goes on.
Any other points?
Guru Maharaj, he was showing that he was materially motivated, but he was asking for material benediction. He was fixed in his desires, what he requested. And similarly, we have to use that fixed consciousness for our devotional service, and the devotional life is meant for people to shine pleasing the devotees.
Okay, one more thing. Like the devotees, even if they have material desire, they go to Krishna and they try to earn it, like hard way, rather than hook or crook, as Prabhupada mentioned from the purport. And that separates a normal, like a non-devotee from a devotee. It's part of both having material desire, but the one, the devotee goes to Krishna and reveals his heart that, okay, I want this. And he wants to earn it through proper way, not just by ethical means. That's what I'm trying to say.
What is this chapter called?
Guru Maharaj Devotion. Careful.
Prabhu,
I have a question yesterday. You know how Dhruva was given to Dhruva? Actually, you think that in that place. Because we know that that's a transcendental planet. He was living before leaving the body, or he was living after he left the body, when he was living on that planet?
Well, that will come as we study, as we go further. Then it hasn't actually got to that part yet, but Prabhupada will explain that when we get there. Shall we just wait and see?
I prefer to get it now, but it's complicated.
That's not as complicated, but it's easy to like fully answer these things when you're studying that particular section like that, because then when you fully understand it, you get like the full perception of it.
I think we read in the second center that Dhruva Maharaj used the death as a stepstone to go into Dhruvaloka.
Yeah, all those things will be described in the next four chapters. Just close the door properly. So, the chapter is called?
Guru Maharaj Lead Song.
Guru Maharaj Lead Song. So, in the beginning of the chapter, there is a description of the descendants of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma's first descendants, or the first descendants which are described in this chapter, are brahmacharis. So because they are brahmacharis, there is no description of their lineage, because there is no lineage. Then it is described that there are some inauspicious qualities which are created by Lord Brahma. And those inauspicious qualities, they also manifest within the universe. Then it is described by Maitreya Muni that he describes the two sons of Swayambhuva Manu, whose names are Uttanapada and Priyavrata. Now he goes directly, Maitreya Muni directly goes to the description of Dhruva Maharaj, who is the son of Uttanapada, because a devotee is eager to hear about devotional service. We're eager to hear about the topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as opposed to other less important topics. So because he's very eager to describe pure devotional service, he immediately goes to the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. And it's described that Dhruva Maharaj was insulted by his mother. stepmother. Whose name was? Suruchi. So Suruchi, she insults Dhruva Maharaj, and because of this insult, Dhruva Maharaj, she goes to his mother, whose name is?
Suniti.
And he complains to Suniti that I've been insulted by my stepmother, and therefore because of this insult, I'm feeling very pained in heart. And his stepmother Suruchi has recommended that if he wants to attain the position of being the king within the universe, then he must be born from her womb. So in order to be born from her womb, then she advises him, you please go to the forest and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He will fulfill your desires. And then when his mother hears this instruction, then she also gives him the same instruction. That you must also go to the forest and you must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you will attain perfection. All of your desires will be fulfilled. So then Dhruva Maharaji leaves and goes to the forest. And he begins to meditate upon Krishna. This will be told in the remainder of this chapter. So this is his desire. Okay. You have to come at 7:30. Why do you always come at 8 o'clock? Every time, 8 o'clock. 7:30 is better. Okay, good. So, he describes that Dhruva Maharaj, he enters into the forest and then he is approached by his guru, whose name is Narada. When we are sincere in spiritual life, then Krishna sends us our spiritual master, our guru. And our guru leads us to Krishna. So he is sent by Krishna, he sent Narada Muni, and Narada gives him instruction that he should meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he will attain perfection in devotional service. Just sit in the back somewhere. Just go to the back and sit. Okay? Just go through and sit down. Okay. Come early. Don't come at 8 o'clock. It's too disturbing. Okay. So, we heard last night that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was meditated upon by Dhruva. Now, Narada Muni, he tested his disciple. This is the duty of the guru. The guru must test the disciple in order for the disciple to become sincere. So he tested him first. He did not immediately instruct him, but he tested him. And he gave him discouragement. Sometimes the guru discourages to test our sincerity. And when he sees that Dhruva Maharaj is actually sincere, then he gives him proper instruction. So then, last night, then he gave the instruction to Dhruva that you should be equipoised. Do not become disturbed by this situation which you find yourself in. But Dhruva Maharaj, he was very honest, and he said to Narada Muni, I cannot do anything about my nature, because I have Kshatriya blood. And the nature of Kshatriyas is that they are very determined, very fixed upon their purpose. They cannot be equipoised so easily. They're very determined. So, he said, please, you have to give me some other instruction. So he said, then you will go to the forest and you will meditate on the Supreme Lord and you will attain perfection. Approach Krishna to fulfill your material desires. This is the teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Regardless of what your desire is, approach Krishna and he will fulfill that desire. Now, tonight, we'll go from verses 42 to 52. And it will be described where specifically Dhruva Maharaj is told by Narada to go in order to attain perfection. So, any questions or comments so far?
From the verse 4.34, Narada Muni is instructing Dhruva Maharaj about three types of behavior. That one is to be friendly with the equals. One is to be friendly with the equals. Prabhupada was saying that we should be humble at all times.
Yes.
How do you think people, how can one be humble at the same time?
It just, because the nature of devotee is just to be humble. That's the qualification of a devotee. Someone who is a good person, who is a pious person, they're by nature they're humble. Akrita droha. Akrita droha means that he's not defined. So that's the nature of a devotee. So naturally, when we have someone who is equal to us, then we establish a friendship. But while exchanging that friendship, we always manifest qualities such as humility. That is the natural disposition of a devotee. So even though he has a friendly exchange with the devotee, but still there's always an underlying, qualities are always underlying the exchanges. Does that make sense?
Actually, I'm a bit of visibly the contrast. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that always put yourself in a position lower than others. And here the instruction is,
no, but equally means there'll be like, you know, like, so we joke around, you know, like we're friends, so we joke with each other, you know, and sometimes we play tricks on each other, like that, so that's friendship, like that. But we always take the opportunity to serve each other, like, during that exchange. Just like you see in the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, then Swarup Damodar and Pundarik Vijayaniti, when they met each other, then they tried to touch each other's feet. But they were both very strong. So they began to wrestle. Right? And they were holding each other's feet. You know, the whole wrestling that's going on. So Mahaprabhu was laughing. Right? Because the mood is friendship. So, you know, when you meet a devotee and then you begin to wrestle with them, and, you know, it's a mood of friendship. But still, there's the underlying quality of humility is displayed in the sense that they're trying to touch each other's feet, and they have that mood of respect to other entities. So that is the mood of the devotee. So even though it's friendship, but still its respect is always kept. It makes any other points?
What's the name of the
Swarup Damodar and Pundarik
Vijayaniti.
Yeah. Two of the associates, it's mentioned. I can't remember in which of the books it's mentioned. It's mentioned there. Right. So any other points?
What you're saying is that there should be no rivalry.
Yeah. Okay.
So, in the verse 4.21, Sumit is telling Sri Dhruva Maharaj that your grandfather achieved the liberation. He worshipped the Supreme Person, and by the dint of performing the activities of the devotional service, he actually attained basically the liberation. Now, we know that the Swami Bhavana will last for about 71 yuga cycles. So, I'm not able to understand that if he has achieved the liberation at this point of time, while this pastime is going on, whether it's alive or it's not alive.
Mentions in the
4.21.
4.8.2. Yeah, so liberation means within this lifetime we can attain liberation. One who's fully engaged in devotional service is liberated. Krishna teaches us in the Bhagavad Gita. Okay. So he's a liberated soul because he appears further on in the past lives. He comes and instructs Dhruva Maharaj in a few chapters. So that's not that he left this world, but you become a liberated soul by being fully engaged with body, mind, and words in the service of Krishna. There's a teaching of Rupa Goswami.
What should
Yeah, I don't know if they're fully fledged Vishvakarmas or if they're like some sort of. I know we've had this discussion before, but I'm not sure if it's full fledged or if it's something else. Like that. Yeah, I'm not arguing the point with you, but like we said, there's different types of incarnations. So specifically, or not whether they have the full potency of all the other Vishnu tattvas, whether they're on that level or not, I'm not sure. Yeah, so then it becomes a little confusing about the statement. So, any other points? Okay, so we begin verse 42. My dear boy, I therefore wish all good fortune to you. You should go to the bank of the Jamuna, where there is a virtuous forest named Madhuvan, and there be purified. Just by going there, one draws nearer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always lives there. What is the wonder for this?
What Narada Muni and Sumati, the mother of Dhruva Maharaj, advised Dhruva Maharaj to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now Narada Muni is especially giving him direction how this worship of the Supreme Person can very quickly fructify. He recommends that Dhruva Maharaj go to the bank of Yamuna, where there is a forest of the name Madhuvan, and begin his meditation and worship there. Places of pilgrimage yield a special advantage for a devotee in quickly advancing his spiritual life. Lord Krishna lives everywhere, but still it is very easy to approach him in holy places of pilgrimage because these places are inhabited by great sages. Lord Sri Krishna says that he lives wherever his devotees are chanting the glories of his transcendental activities. There are many places of pilgrimage in India. And especially prominent are Bhatri Narayana, Dwaraka, Rameshwara and Jagannathapuri. These sacred places are called four dhams. Dhamma refers to a place where one can immediately conduct the Supreme Lord. To go to Bhatri Narayana, one has to pass through Haridwar on the path to the Supreme Personality. Similarly, there are other holy places of pilgrimage such as Prayagya, Allahabad and Mathura. And the topmost of them all is Vrindavana. Unless one is very advanced in spiritual life, it is recommended that he live in such holy places and execute devotional service there. But an advanced devotee like Narada Muni, who is engaged in preaching work, can serve Supreme Lord anywhere. Sometimes he even goes to the hellish planets. Hellish conditions do not affect Narada Muni because he is engaged in greatly responsible activities in devotional service. According to statement of Narada Muni, Madhuvana, which is still existing in the Vrindavana area, in the district of Mathura, is most sacred place. Many saintly persons still live there and engage in the devotional service of the Lord.
Thank you. Okay. So what are the points so far?
One of the components of Panchayana Bhakti is Mathura, the importance of defending and building a holy place. Also, the verse which we studied earlier, Bhavadvida Bhagavata, Tirtha Bhuta Swami, a holy person anyway carries the places of endearment within his heart because he's always having Lord within the heart. So normally wherever he goes, that place becomes very holy.
Vrindavan Lord stands at the time when visiting the Lord is about to come, which will perform the pastime. So here, Guru Maharaj is instructed to go to Sri Madhuvan and perform the austerities. So how is Vrindavan descending into the Lord Krishna?
No, because Vrindavan is eternally manifest. Like that, so even in the material world, then Vrindavan is situated in that particular place. But then when Krishna arrives, then he performs, his leelas become prakat, which means they become manifest, whereas previously they were aprakat. So Vrindavan is already there, and Krishna's pastimes are already there. But then when Krishna appears at the right time, then we see everything becomes prakat, it becomes manifest to the eyes of the ordinary souls, whereas previously it is uppercut. And then when Krishna leaves, to our vision, then it becomes uppercut once again. Like that. So even beforehand, then there's no. Oh, it always has that point, see. Like that. So before and after. Any other points?
I read somewhere that the present Vrindavan is called Bom Vrindavan.
Boma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Boma means earthly Vrindavan.
Yes.
Yeah. Generally, we say Goloka Vrindavan means the Vrindavan in the spiritual world, and Gokula Vrindavan generally we say means Vrindavan in Boma. Vrindavan, yeah, the Brajabhumi in this world. Both are the same. Okay. Any other points?
There is a temple of your Madhava.
In Madhava? You've been there?
Yeah.
Hands up if anyone's been to Madhava. Hands up if you've been to the place where Prabhupada described in the Purport there is a mound, small, very small hill, where Dhruva Maharaj actually sat and performed his meditation. Does anyone remember that place?
The temple is on the high. Yeah, the temple of
Mathura?
Yeah, it's in the
Mathura
Mandala.
Mathura Mandala.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, it's not far from Mathura actually.
But you have to go up to that temple.
It's not very big. The hill's only about as big as this room. It's not a big hill. It's just a very small hill.
Yeah, you have to go there up there.
Yeah, I think there's something on top of it.
Yes.
I can't remember if there's a temple on top or if it's...
Yeah, there is a temple that you have to go up.
Right.
To see the temple.
Yeah. Last time I went there was 1994, so I can't remember that. Can't remember the detail, I just remember this small hill which is there. So it is mentioned that if you want to receive quick results in your devotional service, you should perform devotional service in the Holy Dham, because the potency of the Holy Dham is such that whatever service you do there is magnified hundreds of thousands of times. That is the potency of Mayapur, of Puri, of Vrindavan. So therefore devotees regularly try to make a pilgrimage to Mayapur, to Puri, and to Vrindavan, because whatever service that you render there becomes magnified many thousands of times. And especially during the month of Kartik. If you go to Vrindavan, Mayapur, or Puri during the month of Kartik, then you get thousands of magnifications of your devotional service. Whatever service you render becomes magnified thousands of times. So therefore, Narada, he understands that Dhruva is a mixed devotee, Mishra. It's like Karma Mishra Bhakti. It means that there is some desire mixed in with his devotion. He is a Vaishnava. He is a devotee of the Lord. Just like Suruchi and Suniti. They're all Vaishnavas, they're all devotees, because they're instructing, if you want something, then go to Narayan, go to the Lord, and then you'll become perfect. So they are devotees, but Suruchi is Kanishtha Adhikara, and very materialistic in her consciousness. You know, she says, if you want to be a king, then you can take birth, do austerity, and then take birth in my womb, and then I will give you the ability to be a king. So she's very materialistic, but she says, but if you want to attain this, then you go and worship Narayan, you go and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So devotee, but very mixed in her devotional service. So Dhruva gets this instruction, but he is very absorbed in his material desire, very distracted. His consciousness is very contaminated by that material desire. So, Narada, being an expert preacher, as we discussed last night, the Narada says, then Dhruva, if you have this desire, then fulfill this desire by trying to approach Krishna. Because he knows that whenever a devotee approaches Krishna, even if you have some material desire in your heart, Krishna will remove that desire. Krishna knows how to remove those desires. The spiritual master knows how to remove those desires. If there's something in your heart which is impure, then you go to Krishna. And Krishna will fulfill that desire, but simultaneously he will remove your attachment to it. So this is Krishna's expertise and Krishna's mercy. So, Narada, he instructs Dhruva, then you worship the Lord. And best for you to get fast results is that you go to the Holy Dharma. Because in the Holy Dharma you get thousands of times more results, thousands of times more quickly. It says that spending 3 days in Vrindavan, which means Mayapur or Puri, it means that you get the benefit of spending 1 year. For 3 days in Vrindavan, you get the benefit of 1 year in any other holy place. Any other holy place you go to. But you go to Vrindavan for 3 days, the same benefit as being 1 year in any of those other holy places. That is the potency of Vrindavan, Puri and Mayapur. So therefore he understands. Okay, Dhruva, you have some desire, but you approach the Lord, and while you approach the Lord, you go to this holy place and you will get your desire very quickly fulfilled. Now Prabhupada mentions that of all the holy places, Vrindavan is the topmost. Because Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. This is established by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That Vrajendra Nandana, or Krishna, who is the son of the king of Braj, then that personality, that Vrindavan Krishna, Nandanandana, Yashoda Nandana, he is the original Swayam Bhagavan. He is the original personality of Godhead. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. It is that original personality from Vrindavan. He is original. So because he is the original personality of Godhead, his Dharma is the most potent. It is considered to be the topmost place in existence. And the benefit you get from devotional service in Vrindavan cannot be matched by any other holy place. It says in the scriptures that if you chant the Vishnu Sahasranam, which means you chant 1,000 names of Vishnu, by chanting one name of Ram, you get the same benefit. And by chanting three names of Ram, by chanting one name of Krishna, you get the benefit of chanting three names of Ram, and then 3,000 names of Lord Vishnu. So that is how potent it is. So Krishna's name is the most potent. Krishna is the most potent. He is the original personality. And his Dharma is the most potent. So it is described, the Prabhupada says that we should attempt to go to Vrindavan at any opportunity we get. Now Prabhupada says that for an advanced devotee, it's interesting how Prabhupada establishes this point. Because normally we think we're not advanced enough to go to Vrindavan. But Prabhupada said, actually, the advanced devotees do not necessarily reside in Vrindavan, but the advanced devotees leave Vrindavan and they preach. Srila Prabhupada said in his pastimes, around about 1975, that Prabhupada said, I have no sentiment to die in Vrindavan. I simply want to die on the battlefield, fighting for Krishna like Arjuna, until my very last breath. And Prabhupada said that if I die in New York, then you build me a samadhi on the roof of the temple. Because at that time in New York, we had a 13-story building. And said Hare Krishna down the side. Imagine a 13-story building and said Hare Krishna down the side. Very prominent. That's how powerful our movement was becoming. So, Srila Prabhupada said, if I die, then you just put my samadhi on the roof. He said, I have no sentiment to die in Vrindavan. Because wherever the pure devotee is, he's preaching Krishna consciousness. And whenever you preach Krishna consciousness, if your consciousness is right, then you're in Vrindavan. Now Prabhupada said in Melbourne, he said, this is not Melbourne, it is Vrindavan. That is the consciousness of a pure devotee. So this is advanced devotional service. That if we are always absorbed in preaching, then we live in Vrindavan. So the nature of the conditioned soul of a Kanishtha Adhikari is that he becomes absorbed in his own petty material life. So if you become absorbed in your own material life, you become miserable. So how to avoid the misery or the suffering of being absorbed in our material life? Then it is mentioned, or it is described, that we must preach. Because as soon as you begin to preach, right, then you forget about your problems. Right? Because then you're dealing with the problems of others. That's why a devotee is called para dukkha dukkhi. He is not absorbed in himself. You know, sometimes devotees come too preoccupied with our, oh my, I have this problem, I have that problem. No, we all have problems. Speak to any devotee. Everyone has problems. The point is that devotees have to become absorbed in preaching and delivering the other conditioned souls who are suffering. And as soon as you become absorbed in trying to assist others, you forget about your problems. Your problems become minuscule, disappear. Like that. So the one who lives like that, then he always lives in Vrindavan. That is spiritual consciousness. Okay, so, Vrindavan, can you read the final paragraph?
There are 12 forested areas of Vrindavan and Madhuvan. He is one of them. Pilgrims from all parts of India assemble together and visit all 12 of these forests. There are 5 forests on the eastern bank of Yamuna. Vrindavan, Bilavana, Lahuvana, Vrindavan and Mahavan. On the western side of the bank there are 7. Madhuvan, Talavan, Kumadavan, Gulavan, Kamayavan, Kadiravan and Vrindavan. In those 12 forests there are different ghatas on Vedic places. They are listed as follows. Abhimukha, Anirudha, Koyatirtha,
You don't have to read them all. No, you're doing the right thing, but you don't have to, because it will take a long time. Yeah, thank you. So, there are 12 forests in Vrindavan, 12 principal forests. So, on the eastern side of the Yamuna, is it mentioned?
5 on the eastern side.
Yeah, 5 on the eastern side.
7 on the eastern side.
And 7 on the western side. So the 5 on the eastern side are primarily the sporting places of Balaram. The pastimes of Balaram are more prominent on the eastern side of the Jamuna in those 5 forests. And then on the western side of the Jamuna in the 7 forests, the pastimes of Krishna are more prominent. Not that Balaram does not do anything on the western side and Krishna does not do anything on the eastern side. They're both pastimes. But Balaram becomes more prominent on that side, and Krishna becomes more prominent on the other side. Now, of the 12 forests, out of all of them, Krishna's favourite forest is Vrindavan. Right? Now, Vrindavan goes, if we go to Vrindavan, then Vrindavan goes from the Jamuna, where Keshi Ghat is, where the Jamuna is, all the way from there back to Govardhan Hill, and even past Govardhan Hill, instead all the way back to Nandagram. That whole area, that is the largest forest, and that is Krishna's favourite forest. Because within that forest is Govardhan. And next to Govardhan is Radhakrishna. So this is Krishna's favourite forest. This is most, where his most excellent pastimes take place. And somehow we are very fortunate because we are sitting next to Govardhan. So we're in Krishna's favourite forest right now. And when you become very advanced, you will see that we are in Krishna's favourite forest right now. But we do not have that vision at this point. So he said he was. The instruction was given to Dhruva Maharaj, you go to Madhuvan. Because in Madhuvan you will get all perfection. So this is what the spiritual master instructs the disciple. The spiritual master instructs the disciple, go to the holy Dham. Because in the holy Dham you will get perfection. Yeah? So the guru gives us permission and instruction to enter the holy Dham. You cannot enter the holy Dham without the permission of your guru. Just like it is said, you cannot bathe in Radhakund without the permission of your guru. Yeah? With your guru's permission, then you can bathe in Radhakund, if he gives permission. Okay. So, it is by the guru's mercy that we get the training and the qualification to gain some appreciation to enter Vrindavan. Okay. We should never think or feel that we are qualified to enter Vrindavan or Mayapur or Puri. We have no qualification. It is simply the mercy of our spiritual master, of Srimati Radharani. If we have any, if we receive their mercy, then somehow we may be able to attain these places. But because Dhruva Maharaj received the mercy of Narada, Narada said, go to this place, Madhuvan. So he said, okay, he was obedient to his guru, Saint Nikros, and he went there and then immediately attained perfection. Describes in a few chapters how quickly he attained perfection by following the guru's instruction. So if you follow the guru's instruction sincerely, you will attain Krishna. Prabhupada said that Krishna is not in the bushes of Vrindavan. You don't find Krishna by walking around in Vrindavan and thought, oh, where's Krishna, where's Krishna? No, Prabhupada said you find Krishna by following the instruction of your guru. And by following the instructions of your guru, you will see Krishna in due course of time. That will give you the qualification to see Krishna. Not walking around in Vrindavan, you know, looking behind all the bushes. Like that. Unless, of course, you're so advanced that you really are looking for Krishna behind the bushes. That's it. It's good to. Good to ask. Good to get his blessings. You can say like, I am planning a trip like that. And do you give me your blessings so I can go there? Okay. She's okay? It's okay. Is she okay? Okay. Yeah. So then, yeah, then take his blessings before you try to go. Okay.
I have taken a bath in Radha Kund when I was 3. I didn't even have guru, anyone.
How old are you now?
Now I'm 29.
Okay, so make sure you ask your guru before you. 3 years old, no problem. After that.
That's probably the reason he's sitting here.
Even when I was 5.
That's probably the reason he's sitting here today.
It probably is. Probably is. Okay. Any other points? Okay. Narad Muni instructed, my dear boy, in the waters of the Jamuna River, which is known as Kalindi, you should take 3 baths daily because the water is very auspicious, sacred and clear. After bathing, you should perform the necessary regulative principles of Ashtanga Yoga and then sit down in your asana, sitting place, in a calm and quiet disposition. So the entire process of Ashtanga Yoga, what is the purpose of Ashtanga Yoga? To achieve super soul. Yeah, that's true. To control the mind, at least preliminary, at least the beginning, and at the end also, is to control the mind. That is why we perform Ashtanga Yoga. So the mind must come under control. Because you cannot meditate on Krishna's form until you control the mind. Once the mind is controlled, then you can meditate upon Krishna's form. So this is the process of Ashtanga Yoga. It is also the practice of Bhakti Yoga. We must learn to control the mind. So we were discussing this in the class this morning, the Bhagavatam class, that Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur tells that one should, in the morning, beat the mind 100 times. And then in the evening, 100 times. Beat your mind. Because your mind is rascal. So you need to beat it again and again and again. Like that. So by beating the mind, then the mind comes under control. Because just like if someone is a miscreant, if someone is duracha, which means he is impious, you must beat that person. Because if you do not beat them, they will not learn good behavior. So similarly, the mind has a tendency towards being wicked. So therefore, in order to control the mind, one must beat it. One must learn to have mental control. Because if you don't control the mind, you cannot think of Krishna. In the beginning. When you have attachment, asakti or ruchi or taste, then you will automatically, your mind will go to Krishna. But we do not have that yet. We do not have that strong taste where the mind automatically goes to Krishna. in a very profound way. I mean, we have attraction to Krishna, but not as it should be. It's not developed enough yet. So therefore, one must beat the mind continuously, like that. So also it is mentioned that if one eats grains which are cooked by non-devotees, the mind will become wicked. So one must be very careful to honour Krishna's prasad. Because when you eat food which is cooked by non-devotees, your mind will become wicked. Yeah? It becomes very hard to control. So therefore, one must fix the mind and practice controlling the mind and fixing it upon Krishna. So we have to do practical things. Avoid eating food which is cooked by non-devotees. And you begin to discipline our mind so that we can begin to think of Krishna in a more natural way. Now, Prabhupada mentions the importance of external cleanliness. Right? One must be clean in order to practice bhakti yoga. Right? Prabhupada says that the two most important principles when one takes second initiation, Brahman initiation, and begins to worship the Archa-Vigraha, what are the two most important principles which Prabhupada stressed? Cleanliness and punctuality. One must be punctual. You cannot keep Krishna waiting. Who are you to keep Krishna waiting? That one time Prabhupada was in Vrindavan greeting the deities at 7 o'clock in ISKCON temples. Generally we greet the deities sometimes 7:15 in Mayapur and other places, but generally say 7 o'clock in most temples. So the pujari was 30 seconds late when he came out to blow the conch, and Prabhupada looked at his watch and he said, "It is very difficult to be a Brahmana in Kali Yuga." Very difficult to be a Brahmana in Kali Yuga. Another time, one of the Mataji's, she used to cook Prabhupada's lunch. I think it was in India somewhere. And she was cooking Prabhupada's lunch every day. And Prabhupada, he wanted his lunch at 12 o'clock sharp. That was Prabhupada's standard. Prabhupada was like clockwork. Right? He would get off a plane, he'd fly all the way across the world, get off a plane and go straight into his routine. It was 5 o'clock in the morning when he arrived, and he, whatever his routine was, he would just continue. No jet lag, no, he was just transcendental and conscious. So Prabhupada took prasad at 12 o'clock. He took bath at 11:30. You know, took bath, put on his tilak. And when Prabhupada took bath up in his bathroom just up here, near his room's just above us here, he's just sitting there. His bathroom is just there. And when Prabhupada took bath, he took bucket bath. Even in Melbourne. Wherever he went around the world. Some warm water, some cold water, mix it, bucket bath. This is Prabhupada, his culture. So 11:30 he would take bath, right? Then come, apply his tilak, sit down, and exactly chant Gayatri, and exactly at 12 o'clock he'd wait for the devotee to come and serve him beside. So this Mataji used to cook him lunch, and she came in one day 3 minutes late. And when she opened the door, Prabhupada was looking straight at the door, and she opened the door and she walked in with a plate, and Prabhupada said, "I've been waiting for 12 years this is Srila Prabhupada. So if you want to worship the deity, you must be punctual. Not all this nonsense, you know, I see like the devotees running to the altar with the deity's plates, you know, for the breakfast offering and so forth, like running there. That's not punctual. Punctual means you must be early. Right? If the offering is at 7:55, I think it is it? What time is Krishna's breakfast? I think it gets offered at 7:55, isn't it? 7:55 till 8:10. Used to be, I don't know what it is now, but I think that was the time previously. I think that's still the time. The plate should be there at 7:50. Not everyone's rushing, and you know, there's all this running. You know, people are running with Krishna's plate. You know, the milk's probably spilling all over the sabji, and it's ridiculous. Not sattva. Right? It's not brahminical. Not a good standard of worship. So the actual standard should be punctuality. So Prabhupada said, to worship the deity, you must have these two qualities: punctuality and Cleanliness. Prabhupada said the Krishna consciousness movement will create a revolution of cleanliness in this world. The Hare Krishnas are known for being suci, which means clean. This is Brahminical life. Krishna says, Samo, Damas, Tapaha, Socham. Socham, Suci, it is a quality of Brahminical life. The devotees must be clean. They're known for being clean. So it is said that here, Dhruva Maharaj was instructed by Narada that if you want to become perfect in the yoga process, you must take bath 3 times daily. Now this is the injunction for sannyasis, those who are in the renounced sort of life. A sannyasi's injunction is that he must take bath 3 times daily. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did this. It is important, right? Grihasthas at least 2 times daily. That's the standard. Like that. And brahmacharis at least 2 times. At least. 2 or 3 times is okay also. At least when you rise in the morning. So by maintaining external purity, this will assist you in maintaining internal purity. Right? It is necessary for cultivating Krishna consciousness, for becoming internally pure. Right? Because if you're not internally pure, if your mind is contaminated, you cannot think of Krishna. If your mind is contaminated, if your mind is unclean, you cannot think of Krishna.
Guru, I always notice that whenever I take bath, like the Prabhupada said that every time you go to the bathroom you have to take bath. Whenever I take bath, I feel like so pure. After I take bath, I feel so fresh and pure.
You're always pure.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
That's okay. Does mean I'll give you better marks in your exam.
I don't care about that.
No, that's good. That's good. So we should be pure, should be clean. So external cleanliness will help with the internal cleanliness. Right? You will become more pure in the mind if you maintain external cleanliness also. It is necessary. Because when you take bath externally, it purifies the subtle body. Right? You'll see in the morning when you wake up, you're in tamagun, right? Very affected by the lower modes of nature. Now, as soon as you take bath, right, then immediately when the water touches your body, it purifies the subtle body. Right? And the mind immediately becomes alert, awakened. Now, it is recommended that one finishes, we take shower. Generally these days, we don't take bucket bath in the West. Like that. So we take a shower, but then we should finish for several seconds with the cold water. Right? I've been doing this ever since I joined the movement. Like, you know, you always finish at the end. Yeah, warm shower, but then cold water at the end. And purifying, and the mind becomes alert. So this is necessary. Right? It assists the body. Right? It assists the subtle body in meditating upon Krishna. So, it is recommended that you should take bath in pure water 3 times a day if you're practicing the yoga process. Okay. Now, the advantage of Dhruva Maharaj bathing in the Jamuna is the Jamuna does not just purify you externally, but also internally. Because that is the potency of Jamuna Devi and Ganga Devi. The potency of the Ganga, the potency of the Jamuna, is that they purify one's consciousness internally also. Because they are spiritual waters, they are not material waters. Same as Radha Kund, right? Supremely pure. So when we take bath in Radha Kund, when we take bath in Jamuna, when we take bath in Ganga, like that, it purifies our soul actually. And assists us in meditating upon Krishna. It's a very powerful item of bhakti, to take bath in these sacred rivers. So we should take bath every day, and when we go to the dham, we should bathe as much as possible in these holy waters, because this will purify us. Actually, when you go to Vrindavan, you take bath, generally the water is coming from underground, which means it's actually coming from the Jamuna, because it's coming from under the water table. Unless you take bath from tank water or something like that. But generally, the, even when you take shower in Vrindavan, generally that's Jamuna water, which you're bathing yourself in. So this is the advantage of going to the holy Nile. But you should take bath in the Ganga or the Jamuna or the sacred waters as much as possible with the blessings of your guru. Any points? After sitting on your seat, practice the three kinds of breathing exercises and thus gradually control the life air, the mind and the senses. Completely free yourself from all material contamination and with great patience begin to meditate on the Supreme Personality of
Godhead.
So obviously this Ashtanga Yoga process is not possible in this age of knowledge. So therefore Prabhupada emphasizes in the first paragraph that we must practice the art of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Nama Sankirtan. This is described in the second canto of the Bhagavad Gita as Hare Nam Anukirtanam. This is the process of chanting, following the footsteps of the spiritual master. We learn how to chant from our guru, from our spiritual masters. They teach us how to chant the Hare Krishna Mantra. You cannot learn how to chant the Hare Krishna Mantra unless you have spiritual guidance. You need guidance to improve your chanting. Just like as I've said previously, for the last 6 months or so I've been listening to His Holiness Mahanidhi Swami's discussions on chanting in his Bhajana Rahasya lectures. So I'm finding... No, Bhajana Rahasya. Other chantings are different series. Okay. So in his Bhajana Rahasya lectures, and also his other chanting lessons, then Maharaj gives many, many, many instructions on how to improve our chanting according to the process which is taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Shikshastika. So this is very beneficial for devotees to study. One must learn the art of chanting, the process of chanting, because before listening to these lectures 6 months ago, I realize now that whatever I knew previously was nothing. Now I'm beginning to understand something about chanting, a little. I'm understanding a little about chanting. I didn't really understand the Shikshastika at all. I didn't really understand what we were doing or the process of how we're meant to attain perfection. The process of attaining perfection, it is an art, it is a science. You have to learn that from your gurus. You need instruction on how to improve in your chanting, on how to attain Krishna consciousness. It doesn't just happen automatically. It can happen automatically if you're very sincere and you just chant very simple heart, but most of us will need a great deal of guidance. And the more guidance we get from our spiritual masters, then the more that we can progress in the process of chanting Hare Krishna. Okay. Ashtanga Yoga, there's no question in this age. The only process which has efficiency in this age is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. But we just say it all the time, chant Hare Krishna, chant Hare. No, we don't actually, we have to do a great deal of work in order to improve our chanting. It's not like an automatic thing. It takes a great deal of effort. We have to concentrate our time and our energy on improving our chanting. Because we put most of our time and energy during the days on everything else but chanting. It's almost like chanting is the final priority of the day. Chanting is the thing you do when you've got everything else done. Now I start chanting. Clickety click. Now the rest of the day is done, now I'll click my way through. Those final rounds you chant at 12 o'clock at night? On the flicker or on the, even on the beach, like that. when the last round takes you 45 minutes to finish? when you've been chanting Gayatri for 25 minutes? It's not really good chanting. You can chant like that, Bahu Jamma Tadiyadi Shravana Kirtan. You can chant like that forever. Bahu Jamma. Just go on chanting, go on chanting, go on. You can chant for lifetimes like that. You won't really progress very far. So, chanting should not be the final thing of the day. It is not the bottom priority, it is the top priority. Now that is difficult because of the way life is these days. Very difficult for people to make it the top priority because there's so many demands from the material energy upon us. Right? So then it becomes our third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, 108th priority. But when you make it your first priority, right, that's when you begin to advance in Krishna consciousness. Right? So you have to contemplate in your life, what do I need to do to make this possible?
Can you share some points whenever it's needed for you in these classes about what you learned from Mahanandaswamy? I tried downloading and listening to those, but the audio is slightly on the lower side. So
that what I got was fine.
Just some few points. Few points.
Yeah, I'll try to put it in. What I just gave was a point, some points. Like that. 6 months of listening, it's a lot of a lot of points there. It's very detailed like that. I'll try to drop more things in, but also what I've just said is what Maharaj is kind of hinting at, like that. And then listen yourself. Like I said, like Chaitanya Prabhu downloaded for me. It was the audio.
Yeah,
was
fine.
Yeah, the quality I've got is quite it's reasonable. I mean, it's quite clear. I haven't had any problems with any of the recordings.
So. My understanding is that the form is manifest from the name. Ashtanga Yogi, in his advanced stage of sadhana, is trying to meditate on the form of the Lord. But in the typical process of Ashtanga Yoga, as we understand, the hearing and chanting are absent. Now, hearing leads to chanting and chanting leads to remembrance. And the name leads to the evolution of the form on which we do physical hearing and meditation. The question is, in Ashtanga Yoga, how can one meditate on the form without taking shelter of the Holy Name? There is no hearing, there is no chanting. How is the form?
No, it's not there's no hearing or chanting. It was back in Kapiladeva's teachings, back in the third canto, it was mentioned that following the Ashtanga process, maybe it was when Kardama, it was somewhere there in the end of the third canto. It was mentioned when Kardama was practicing Ashtanga, I think it was. Or when Kapiladeva was teaching, but I think it was when Kardama was. Yeah, but I think it was when there's a description of Kardama practicing Ashtanga. And Prabhupada mentions at that time that this incorporates deity worship, it incorporates hearing. It's that, not they're only doing Ashtanga, not they're just sitting like that all day. Yeah, they do deity worship, they do hearing and chanting, and they go and practice their Ashtanga. And it even mentions that Dhruva worships the deity. So it's not that he's just, you know, sitting like that the whole time. There's other things involved in the process. So it's not only that.
And also there is Jama and Niyama, and one of the components is Swadhyaya.
Yeah.
Self-learning as well.
Yeah, so there's study involved, yeah. And it was mentioned, it's in the third canon. I just remember that that section, I just can't remember if it might have been Lord Kapila's teachings, because Lord Kapila mentions all about Ashtanga Yoga, and he mentions all these elements of Ashtanga, and he mentions all these items, the many things that you do. So it's like an entire process, it's not just like that. So there is hearing and chanting involved, he mentions that. Okay, so.
How is it that Guru Maharaj
was already aware of the process of Ashtanga Yoga? It says. Just like, how old is Aditya?
Nine.
So he knows all about the process already. You've been teaching him since he was young. So Dhruva was. You learn these things when you're young. It's part of being a child, is that you learn from your parents the process of Krishna consciousness. So you're teaching your child from, you know, from birth, how to be Krishna conscious. So Uttanapad is already teaching Dhruva from his, you know, very childhood. Okay, we do like this, this is Ashtanga. And these personalities are very advanced even though he's 5 years old, but their capacity is, you know, way beyond our capacity. Because you see, Dhruva Maharaj has already left to the forest. You know, he's already gone to the forest, like, I'm going to become perfect already. So, they're extraordinary personalities also. I think so. Because Prabhupada describes he'd already learnt these things. So. Well, there's just one line where Prabhupada mentions he already knew Ashtanga Yoga. Like that. And then Narada gave him instruction. Seems like Narada's saying, okay, go to Madhava. Like that. So he already has a certain amount of knowledge already.
Is the time for one smaller?
Smaller.
Because when Mataji came to Siddhartha Prabhu's house, and she told that when we are chanting, we should think of Krishna instead of hearing the holy name and hearing the sound of the vibration. Which is the right word? To meditate on the form of Krishna or to hear the holy chanting without meditating on Krishna?
It's not wrong to meditate or chant in front of the deities. It's not wrong to chant. It's not wrong to chant in front of a picture of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. It's
but
very.
If we look at Krishna and chant, we can't hear properly.
No, it means that you can do both simultaneously, but it should not be at the expense of chanting. Because, like Burujan Prabhu said one time, he said that our minds try to look for any excuse to meditate on anything but the chanting. So the main thing is that you're hearing the holy name. But while hearing the holy name, even Prabhupada said it's permissible. Prabhupada says that you can remember the pastimes of Krishna while chanting. Prabhupada says these things. He also says just hear. But this may be the very beginning. But as we progress a little more, then you can chant, like, in my ashram, then I have, you know, pictures of the holy dharm, pictures of the deities, like that. So while I'm chanting, you know, Guru Raj there. So I've been chanting with Guru Raj. Last week I was chanting because I was away from all of you. So I was scared because I was thinking, you know, I have no association. Not no association, but I think, you know, very little association. Not even lonely, but just feeling unprotected. Like, because protection comes when we associate with devotees. Right? So there, I was chanting with Guru Raj a lot last week, and meditating on Vrindavan, meditating on Guru Raj, meditating on the holy dharm, meditating on the deities, like that. So that all these things are affected. We put all these pictures in our ashram. Why do we put all the pictures up? Put all the pictures up now, don't look at them. So what's the point? You put them up because while you're chanting, it helps you to remember Krishna. That's why we chant with the devotees. Just like in the morning when we chant japa in the temple, I know that because now I chant japa by myself most of the time. But previously I used to chant in the temple with all the devotees. So when I was chanting, I'd be looking around, and sometimes my mind was floating away. And then I'd see another devotee on the other side of the temple is chanting very seriously, and then immediately I'd think, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Like that. So all these things are meant to be impetuses. Like it is said that you can chant the Prabhupada's japa tape or the japa tape of your guru. Right? So I remember I used to chant with my guru's japa tape. And in the temple, they still do in the temple, Prabhupada? They don't do it anymore? When I joined, Prabhupada was always there every morning. And Prabhupada was always in the background. So it's very effective. Yeah, and then every 10 minutes Prabhupada says, sit properly. Very good. And then you learn the temple goes. Very effective.
Who? So he actually said that in the various stages of bhakti, there are various objects of focus by chanting. So in his presentation he said that until the state of anatana bhakti, one should concentrate his mind only on hearing the transcendental sound vibration. And only when all the anathas are gone, then one becomes eligible to concentrate his mind on the form of the
first. He also mentioned that this was the topic for at the GBC level. They were discussing this, only this topic, and then they came up with this conclusion.
Sri Ramaswamy wrote a paper on it. He wrote a paper on it. I would say, not to try to contradict or anything, but I would say that even in that, because I'm in Anatta Nivritti, but I don't just hear the holy name. I don't just do that. You know, I also try to, you know, meditate on the holy Dham, remember the holy Dham, remember my guru, remember previous acharyas, remember other things are going on there. Actually, next Monday, I'm going to list 6 points on chanting japa. Okay, I was going to surprise you with that, but I like that. So I'm going to list 6 points on chanting japa, which is mentioned by Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. So come on Monday night. And if you can't come on Monday night, then Tuesday we'll go over it again. Like that. But Monday will be the main presentation of it. Like that. So it is mentioned, part of Sanatana Goswami's teaching is contemplating the meaning of the name. So it's there from the beginning. Not so, I'm not trying to contradict because the GBC have written that paper. But something is there. But what it means from what I'm understanding is that until the anattas are gone, you can't fully meditate. You can't. Like that. So therefore, the emphasis in the beginning is to primarily hear. And when you automatically rise in your meditation on the Holy Spirit, then automatically the Lord's form will come. But even my spiritual master, I remember he gave me instructions like, search out the form of the Lord in your mind while chanting. You know, he never said, you know, it was obvious when, you know, we're not on Nishti yet. It was obvious. But he said, search out the form of the Lord in your mind. So these things, they're impetuses. My guru said to me when I was only devoted for 1 or 2 years, he said, remember the holy Dham while chanting. So these things we can add to our chanting to make it, if it does not distract us from our chanting. That's the point. So the basic principle is to hear. Okay, so now we have to keep going, otherwise we'll never get to verse 52. Or we'll get there by 11:30 tonight. Which is okay for some of us. Not for all of us. The form of the Lord is described herein. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. To the devotees who see him, he appears never to be displeased, and he is always prepared to award benedictions to them. His eyes, his nicely decorated eyebrows, his raised nose, and his broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. So this is the beginning of the description of the form of Krishna. Now, why is it that the Bhagavatam places so much emphasis and gives so much description about Krishna's form? Because God is a person. He's not an impersonal entity. He is a personality. Right? This must be, we must become convinced of this point. Nirvisesha Shunyavadi. It must be driven out. That is Prabhupada's mission in this Western world, in the entire world, and especially in India. It must be driven out, this impersonalistic conception that God is void or impersonal. He's not void, he's not impersonal. He is a personality. Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra said to Hanuman, he said, take a benediction. He said, I will give you liberation, mukti. Hanuman said, that means I have to merge into you and I lose my opportunity to serve you. He said, for me that is worse than hell. He said, I would rather go to hell than lose the opportunity to serve you. So Krishna is a person. That's what these next verses establish. Narad Muni continued, the Lord's form is always youthful. Every limb and every part of his body is properly formed, free from defect. His eyes and lips are pinkish like the rising sun. He is always prepared to give shelter to the surrendered soul, and anyone so fortunate as to look upon him feels all satisfaction. The Lord is always worthy to be the master of the surrendered soul, for he is the ocean of mercy. So Prabhupada expresses in the purport that it is natural to surrender to Krishna. We have to surrender to someone. Right? All of us are surrendering to someone. Right? You have to surrender to the government or to, you know, someone. Everyone's surrendered like that. But what benefit are we getting by surrendering to all these other personalities besides Krishna? No? And what are we actually surrendering to these persons? No. Most of us don't want to surrender to these persons, but we're forced to. No? Hands up if you like your boss.
No one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one person. Okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. What's that?
We don't dislike our boss.
Huh?
We don't dislike our boss.
Oh, Shekhar, I just said, hands up if you like it. Hands up if you like your boss. So the point is that most of us, we don't have any, it's not a deep connection which is being made to the people we're surrendering to in this material world. Right? It is not based upon it's not based upon bhakti. Right? We're not devoted to the person. Right? If we weren't paid to go to work, would you go to work and do your job? Right? If there wasn't any phal, any fruit being given to you, would you go?
Never.
You wouldn't go. Right? So what is that? That's the material world. But Krishna, a relationship with Krishna is exactly the opposite. A devotee naturally wants to surrender to Krishna. And why do we want to surrender to Krishna? Because he's Krishna. Because when you meet him, he's so perfect. And describes here that every part of his body is perfect. There's no flaws. Just like you look at our body, there's so many defects. But you look in Krishna's body, there's no defect. So he's beautiful. Shama Sundara. But his internal personality is even more beautiful than his outward form. His personality, his guna, it even surpasses his rupa. His qualities are so wonderful that everyone just loves him. So they just want to surrender to him. It is natural. In this material world, we'll never get that anyway. Right? The people who offer this surrender and the people who receive it, none of them are perfect. So it's always flawed, the entire situation. I have to keep going. So. The Lord is further described as having the mark of Srivatsa, or the sitting place of the goddess of fortune. And his bodily hue is deep bluish. The Lord is a person. He wears a garland of flowers, and he is eternally manifesting. He's eternally manifest with four hands, which hold, beginning from the lower left hand, a conch shell, wheel, club, and
lotus
flower. So many details have been given about the Lord. It's like he wears a garland. When the gopis make garlands for Krishna in Vrindavan, how many different types of flowers do they use? He's mentioned by Narottam Das Thakur, seven types of flowers. Seven types of beautiful, beautiful flowers in Krishna's garland. And Krishna's garlands go all the way down to his ankles, to his knees. Like that very long, long, long garland. So when he dances, his garland sways very beautifully. Only Krishna can do it. It says that when he dresses, he looks like a dramatic actor. Right? If any of us dress up like Krishna, and we came to Bhakti Vaibhav, everyone would say, uh-oh. Jagannath Ram's gone a little bit, too much Varuna juice. Comes in with the gopi dots on, and the turban, and the garland going down to the knees, and the golden dhoti. We're like, okay. But when Krishna does it, it's natural. It's the most attractive. So only Krishna can do this. No one else can do it. It says that when he goes to fight with Kaliya, before he goes to fight with Kaliya and jump off the Kanamba tree, before he goes to fight Kaliya, then he dresses himself nicely. He adjusts everything, tightens his belt, makes sure his turban's nice, makes sure everything's nice, then he jumps. He fights with Kaliya.
With style.
Yeah. David Marita Swami says, with style. That's Krishna. When we do something, we fall over as we walk in. we're all over the place. So when Krishna does it, it's sort of perfect.
Our Guru Maharaj said it too, that Lord Krishna does everything by his son.
Yeah.
Lord Krishna does everything by...
With style.
But, yeah.
With style.
He does it by his style.
The entire body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is decorated. He wears a valuable jeweled helmet, necklaces and bracelets. His neck is adorned with a kostuba jewel, and he is dressed in yellow silken garments. So in Vrindavan he doesn't wear a jeweled crown. In Vrindavan he wears a turban, and he puts mukets and things on there, and peacock feathers and in Vrindavan he prefers the pushpa ornaments, or the jewelry which is made from flowers. He prefers that. He wears the other things, but he prefers the flowers in Vrindavan. When he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra speaking to Arjuna, he was wearing a garland.
Beautiful.
Like everyone else on the battlefield, no one else was wearing a garland. And Krishna was wearing a garland on the battlefield. That's Krishna.
He's very good there.
The Lord is decorated with small golden bells around his waist, and his lotus feet are decorated with golden ankle bells. All his bodily features are very attractive and pleasing to the eyes. He is always peaceful, calm and quiet, and very pleasing to the eyes and the mind. This is Narayan. Krishna is not exactly like Narayan. He is not always calm and quiet. Narayan is calm and quiet, but Krishna is a little restless. That is his nature. Indira, Lalita, which means he's playful, joking. He's a little mischievous. That's his nature. Real yogis meditate upon the transcendental form of the Lord as he stands in the whirl of the lotus of their hearts, the jewel-like nails of his lotus feet glittering. The Lord is always smiling, and the devotee should constantly see the form of the Lord in this form, as he looks very mercifully toward the devotee. In this way, the meditator should look toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of all benedictions. One who meditates in this way, concentrating his mind upon the always auspicious form of the Lord, is very soon freed from all material contamination, and he does not come down from the meditation upon the Lord. So Prabhupada mentions in his final purport, he said that the Bhagavad Vidhimag and the Pancharatrika Vidhimag must be practiced together. What is the Pancharatrika Vidhimag?
Deity
worship. And what is the Bhagavad Vidhimag?
Right?
Shravanam Kirtanam. Right? Hearing and chanting about Krishna. You must do these two things simultaneously. This is the most effective way to become Krishna conscious. I know, as I've said before, for the last like 3.5 years or so, I've been worshipping Guru Raj every day. So before that, I didn't worship a deity on a daily basis. So I know now my Krishna consciousness has evolved a lot more by worshipping the deity every day. Because it cements within one's consciousness the form of the Lord. Because when one does deity worship, we do the external worship. But actually, the more important worship is done within the mind. So when you meditate on the Lord, then you decorate his entire form. And you meditate on many features of the Lord. And this cements the Lord's form within your mind. Right? It brings the fact that God is a person within your mind. Not only is he a person, he is the sweetest person. He is Madhusudan. He is Shyamasundara. He's the most beautiful person. So all this comes from deity worship. And then when you hear and chant, then your chanting becomes so much more effective. So you must do all of these things simultaneously. Shravanam, Kirtanam. Just like a few weeks ago at the farm, it was Gadadhar Pandit's appearance. So then I read about Gadadhar Pandit for about half an hour while I was taking prasad. And then afterwards, I went and began to chant my japa. And then when I was chanting, my chanting was so much better because I'd been absorbed in hearing about Gadadhar Pandit. So then I had so much to meditate upon while chanting. Like that. So therefore, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Pancharatrika Vidhimag. You put all this together, this is the process to become Krishna conscious. Okay. So we'll stop here, and next Monday we'll continue with the chapter. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.